We're going to be in Psalm 46. Richard, you'll notice, is not here. He got home with Beth, and she went up the steps into their second floor apartment, and he began to follow. And he got swarmed with these hornets or something like that. And so he ran down the steps, and they were like, you know, badgering him. So he did the, you know, the smart thing. He went to the neighbor's house and got this chemical that you spray. You can stand there like 20 feet away, except it was like almost empty. So he had to get really close to it, and he shot the thing with it. And it was this humongous nest. He says he can't figure out why nobody noticed it until now. And he just got a little bit in there, and they all came, you know, whatever. So he called me after the morning service, and he was hiding in his car, and Beth was in the house, so the door shut, and he couldn't get to her. And they've been battling the bees this afternoon, trying to get this all, and they got the neighbors involved and everything, and so it sounds like a pretty big ordeal. And he said, if I don't make it back, because they've got to, you know, one of the neighbors is highly allergic and that kind of thing, and they're all trying to, it's kind of like a community effort all of a sudden. So that's where he is. Something as simple as walking up your front steps into your house, you know, ought to be easy enough. I remember in Northland, when we were teaching at Northland Baptist Bible College, that sometimes in the wintertime, the steps would get very icy. And Rena remembers my running out the door to go teach a class, and I went out the door, and there, you know, there's a window, and then the steps, and all she remembers is our feet flying up, and I was flat on my back on the steps. And you know, you've had experiences of falling through steps and all kinds of things. Steps or things that we put our feet on, we ought to be able to trust in them. And we ought to be safe. I mean, Andrew builds steps all the time. And I've seen some of his handiwork in that. And Andrew probably wouldn't be in business today if the things he built for people to stand on or live on were going to cave in. When they hire Andrew to build something, they have to have some kind of confidence in him, some measure of confidence. Well, Psalm 46 is really about confidence, having confidence. And what do we need to put our confidence in? I read a story a while ago, this is several years ago now, I think I shared it with you once years ago, that a man was trying to teach his child. He had a son my son's age, 6 years old, and he set him up on a fence, and you've seen parents do this before, jump, I'll catch you, trying to teach your kids to trust you. Jump, I'll catch you. I'm afraid, Daddy. No, jump, I'll catch you. So the boy jumped, finally. But instead of catching him, the father stepped back, and the kid hit the ground. He was crying, and his knees were scraped, and the dad wiped him up and hugged him and dried his tears. And then finally, when the son had stopped crying, he sat him down and said, "Now look, this is a lesson for you. Never trust anybody." This is not good parenting, okay? I'm not endorsing this. And maybe the father had good intentions. He was trying to make him not gullible, trying to make him go through life with his eyes open. He didn't want him trusting people without discretion. Probably what he ended up doing is teaching the son not to trust him, I think, is what that happened. The son would probably gravitate to people he could trust. But with that one illustration, I think he destroyed his son's ability to have confidence in something outside of himself. Never trust anybody. The only person I can be sure of is what I'm thinking, what I'm doing. And for that reason, I think he damaged his son's perspective on life, because every person eventually realizes you have to trust somebody. You do. In fact, you cannot go through this week without trusting people. When you drive down the road, you have to trust that the other cars you're passing are in working order, don't you? Or that they're paying attention and they're not going to suddenly swerve in your lane. You know how many people have accidents and even lose their lives just because one little mechanical malfunction or one little turn of the wheel? That takes a tremendous amount of trust. What the father, I think, should have done is caught his son with a firm grasp and held him close. And then he should have said, son, you can trust me. I will always do my best to trust you. And if you will listen to me, I will teach you who you can trust and who you should not trust. I think that's the proper way to rear children. But life is about learning who we can trust. We trust the bank people when we go in to hand them our money and make a deposit. We don't know where that's going to go. Do we? But you turn on the water faucet, especially when you have city water, and you drink what's coming out of there. But think about it. You don't know where that water's come from.
Maybe you do.
Maybe you do, and that's why you don't drink. That's why you have your own well, right? But who knows what's happening? You give your credit card number over the internet. My sister found out that several months ago she was in another state buying $700 worth of office equipment one month, when she was not, in fact, in another state buying office equipment. And that took a long time to get straightened out. You go to a doctor, and he says, you need to have these tests, or you need to have this medicine, and he writes out a prescription, and we go to the drugstore, and we give him the prescription, and we put in our body what those people put in that bottle. Think about it. How do we really know what's happening? Mistakes could be made. How do we really know we can trust people? A police officer pulls us over. Do you know that people have been known to get police officer uniforms and pull people over and tell them to follow him and actually molest people or steal their money and that kind of thing? How do we know that the police are doing, or the police officer is who he says he is? All of life is based on trust. And we have to leap towards something in whom we've placed our confidence in. So it begs the question, where is our confidence? Where is our ultimate confidence? And there are a lot of things that you can think of in which you or maybe other people put their confidence in. Okay, money laid up for the future. You know, when money is short, I know we're always thinking, okay, how can we make ends meet? And things get really complicated. But we sort of relax and feel okay as long as we know we have that nest egg or that money to fall back on. Money gives us confidence. And is our money, or is our confidence in the fact that we have enough dollars to rescue us from things? Investments that we're hoping will mature. Good insurance that promises to cover you in emergency. A good job that has security, that pays well. Maybe another person that will take care of you. Maybe personal abilities or preparation. Maybe your education. You know you can always fall back on that because you know you're hireable somehow. Maybe your ability to be in control of what happens to those around you. Maybe your way to figure out what's going to happen and plan for the future. There's lots of things that we really do source our confidence in, and we go through a week and a day thinking, okay, I can get by, and this, all these things are going to happen because I know about them. I have them all in control. One of the ways to determine what your confidence rests in is to ask yourself, what do I fear? What am I afraid of? What would cause my confidence to be shaken? Maybe if you think of losing a job, for instance, you think, oh no, that would really shake me. I don't know what I would do. Or maybe the loss of a loved one. You know, if that person passed away, if I lost my husband or my wife or this loved one, what would I do? Maybe that some harm will come to you or somebody in your family that you're not going to be able to prevent. Or maybe a financial crisis or the loss of good health or physical abilities or a loss of control over where you live or the lack of ability to know your future, knowing what's happening to you, losing control that way. And whatever those things are for you, the things that shake us and cause us to think, oh no, what would really happen if that took place? They teach us where our confidence lies. What we really get upset about losing is really where we're putting a lot of confidence because of the threat of that being taken away. Because we all know intuitively that all of these things will eventually fail us. People will fail us. Calamity will come. People will pass away. God will take believers home to glory. Jobs will be terminated. Health will fail. Something unexpected will happen. It will. Now, if it happens this week and it's really big, don't blame it on me, okay? It just, this is providential. But something will happen. You know that. It will surprise you. In fact, the only way we can live without fear is if we put our confidence in something that we know will always be there. Something that will never be shaken. And that is the message of Psalm 46. Let's look at the psalm together. I'm just going to read it. Look what he says here. This is a song of the sons of Korah, the descendants of Korah. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. Even though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though its waters roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with its swelling. And then we have a Selah, and it marks in this particular psalm the sections of the psalm. We have three paragraphs. Each of them are marked with Selah at the end. 4-6 says this then, there is a river whose stream shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacle of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her just at the break of dawn. The nations raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord, who has made desolations in the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God, which, by the way, because we're not going to get to it today, does not mean to sit around in a meditative stance, waiting to know the Lord. He's saying, stop. That's what the verb is in Hebrew. Be still. Stop fretting. Stop running around trying to take care of everything. And know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. And then we have, again, this trust, this confidence. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. This psalm teaches us that the Lord alone is our absolute confidence. It's confidence that is unshaken. And I think the message of this psalm is that confidence that is unshaken is not confidence in God and other things. Confidence that is unshaken is in God alone. I think that is the message of this psalm. It's written, as I said, by some of the descendants of Korah, and it appears to be composed in connection with one of the times Jerusalem was surrounded. Do you notice the references to the city of God in this psalm? It appears to have been written during one of the times that Jerusalem was surrounded by the enemies. And the most well-known time of that was when Sennacherib came with the armies of Assyria and surrounded Jerusalem. Hezekiah was on the throne. The situation looked helpless until the Lord himself defended Jerusalem. Remember, he sent his angel through the camp of the Assyrians stationed around Jerusalem. And in one night, 185,000 Assyrian soldiers lay dead. That's more than twice the size of Asheville of people in the army that were all there, ready to camp the rest of the year and lay siege, terrible siege to Jerusalem. And God took all of their lives in one night. And these were not just ordinary men. They were warriors. They were ruthless killers. Assyrians were fierce fighters. God took them all. God defended his people. That's why he says in here that God is our refuge and strength. That the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. The city of Jerusalem served as a haven of refuge, and it was a source of confidence. But only because the Lord dwelled there. This is where the temple was. And the composers of the psalm, I think, capture this confidence in this psalm. And really, I think it is embodied in this expression, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And they could say that about the city of God because that was where God's glory was dwelling, in the temple. Now, these three stanzas, I think, that I mentioned, they're separated with the Selah. They encourage us to cling to our God. And I'll tell you how they encourage us. Here's what we see in the first stanza. We're not even going to get out of the first stanza this morning. But in the first stanza, we see the confession of our confidence. I want to talk about that for a few minutes, and then we'll pick this back up next week. The confession of our confidence. A confession, when we use it in a religious context, often means a declaration about what we believe our beliefs to be, what we believe the truth to be. That's a confession. Here's what I believe to be true about God and about my relationship with him. When we come to unite formally in fellowship with a body, we have a confession that we read and agree to, that this is what I believe. I believe doctrinally what this church teaches. And in the first section of the psalm, we have this bold declaration of confidence in God, which really amounts to a type of a firm confession. In fact, the truth exhibited in this confession is reckless. This man has reckless trust in God. They brazenly declared that they will fear nothing. We will not fear, he says. Even if the very earth is dissolved, it's the kind of claim that we would naturally dismiss as far-fetched or ridiculous if we were to hear anyone else speak like this. What do you mean we're not afraid of anything? I remember years ago when these T-shirts came out. I haven't seen many people sporting them anymore, but there was a slogan. Matt's shaking his head. You're nodding his head. What was that? No fear. No fear. I remember preaching a message to a bunch of young people in Minnesota, telling them there are things that you had better fear. And Scripture teaches us what they are. But there's this no fear. And I understand the popular slogan. Have confidence. You can do it. Don't shrink back. Go for it. But that is really an empty boast that we have no fear if we're not putting our confidence in something that is unshaken. But because this confession concerns the Lord of hosts, it's genuine and it's sobering. In the first line, here's what we see, the scope of our confession. If you're taking notes on that handout, we have the confession of our confidence. And here's the scope of this confession. God is our refuge and strength. Two specific ideas here, our refuge and our strength, indicating the kind of care that God gives to his people. First, it says he's our refuge. He's our refuge. In other words, God is a fortress who shields us. That's what that word means. He's the fortress who shields us. Cities in the ancient world, as you know, were built with high walls to shield the people, to protect them from enemies. Some of the population, including the king and his court, would live inside the walls, but most of them would live outside the walls in the villages or in the farming communities. But when the scouts came back and said, "We're being invaded, the army is advancing," all of the people who were outside of the walls would drop what they're doing and they'd gather what little things they had and they would flee into the city inside the protection and safety of the walls. And the idea here is God is our fortress. He is the stronghold into which we can flee. He protects us and shields us from harm. So first of all, God is our fortress who shields us. Secondly, God is our strength. Not only is he a fortress who shields us, he is a fortitude who sustains us. He's a fortitude who sustains us. He is our strength. The word strength refers to an inner strength or fortitude through which we bear up under life's crushing load. So in this psalm, God is both fortress and fortitude. Both ideas are present in the expression, God is our refuge and strength. He is able both to shield us from calamity, that's externally, and to sustain us within, that is internally. And as the children of God, I think we're often reminded of God's power to shield us. I think we think of God's protection. I think we think of his protection from disease, maybe healing when we have sickness, safety in his deliverance from enemies, both physical and spiritual. It's not only flesh and blood, Paul says, we wrestle with. Escape from danger. I remember once leaving my studies and running an errand for Rena and coming to an intersection and stopping and being about to go after the light turned green, and a car, you've had this happen, comes through after a few seconds. For some reason, I hesitated, and I don't know why, but the car on the other side did not stop. It came further, and boom, there was a wreck right in front of me. And it wasn't that bad, actually. He hadn't pulled out very far, but it could have been very bad. But it makes you think, oh, what can happen? So we pulled over, and we got to talking, and got everything straightened out. We got the right people called and so forth. But it was a reminder at that point, as it always is, that God protects our well-being in the physical world. He sovereignly directs the traffic of the elements, of the events that surround us, so that nothing enters in without his knowledge and control. It's not that nothing ever enters in. I mean, we might be the one hit next time an accident or a near accident happens. But it's that there's nothing that can get in that is beyond his control. Here's our fortress. He's our refuge. He's our fortitude. Sometimes God allows us to suffer. There will be times of sickness, times of disease, times of enemies. But God is our fortitude. He helps us to bear up in the midst of those trials. If it were pleasing to God to allow a serious accident to take place, it means that we would go through a trial, and yet God would give us his fortitude to bear up underneath that trial. So I want you to understand, God is always our fortress, and he's our fortitude. And we can trust in that. He shields us. And even when he doesn't shield us, he never allows anything in that is beyond his control. And when something like that happens, he is sovereign over the event and will give us strength to bear that. That is how he treats his children. And so we can fly to him. We can cling to him. And that is why we have great confidence in him. He will always be this God for us. There is never a time when God is not a fortress, and there is never a time where he will not give us strength or fortitude, but what we need at the time. And so we can have our absolute confidence in God. Secondly, I want you to see the sufficiency of the confession. The sufficiency of the confession. We'll probably stop here after this. He says in verse 1 again, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Now the phrase, very present help, is a phrase that embodies several wonderful ideas. And I don't think any one English word can translate this. The idea that God is very present expresses the sufficiency of God to help us. God is able to help. God is ready to help. God is near. That's what very present means. He's able to help. His help is not theoretical. It's actual. He is ready to help. His help is not given grudgingly. He is not our refuge and strength when he gets around to it. It's very present. He's able, he's ready, and he's near. He's not far off. He himself is near us. He's at hand. He's ready to help. I remember the first Gulf crisis that we went into, there was a song that got really popular, and even a lot of Christians said, oh, this is a wonderful song, and it in a way, it expresses God's truth. Well, I'm not sure how much it did, but it was the song that said, they were singing, God is watching us from a distance. Remember that song? For some reason, it was popularized around the first Gulf crisis before the one that we're in right now. But that is an unbiblical truth. For God's people, God is not watching us from a distance. He's right here with us. He is a very present help in trouble. Psalm 9:9 says this, the Lord will be a refuge in times of trouble. Psalm 20, verse 1, may the Lord answer you in the day of trouble. Psalm 22, 10 and 11, you have been my God. Be not far from me, for trouble is near. Psalm 50, verse 15, call upon me in day of trouble. I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. The fact that God is our refuge and our strength, and that his help is sufficient, it's ready at hand, is what leads the psalmist to continue to make these incredible declarations in the psalm. The next one is this, the boast of the confession, which we'll tackle next week, but I just want to give you a preview. The boast of the confession. We will not fear. Bring it on. Let come what may. We know to whom we are going to flee. We know who is going to give us strength. And really, I think it's significant that this psalm was written in connection with some great invasion of Jerusalem that God rescued them from, because they had been through it. If you read of any of the invasions of Jerusalem, you realize that they had really been put to the test to trust God. And having trusted him, these sons of Korah write this incredible psalm saying, wow, if God can take us through that incredible invasion and we're rescued from it, there's nothing else we can go through where God cannot do just the same. Which leads them to this boast of this confession: we will not fear. I want to probe that a little further when we pick up here next Sunday afternoon. But let's just take this much at least in verse 1 and rejoice in the fact that we serve a God into whom we can flee and who will give us strength. And somebody who is not grudgingly giving us help, he is ready and able and wonderfully sufficient at giving us what we need at the time we need it. We serve a great God, and we can trust in him. I know we hear this all the time, but we can. And we need to be challenged to think about doing it this week, because there will be something that comes through, perhaps, that you have no idea about right now, that may catch you by surprise. And the first response for the believer needs to be on his knees, pouring his heart to the Lord, trusting in him, running to him as a fortress and trusting in him for that fortitude that only God can give. Father, we thank you for this wonderful reminder of the fact that you are our fortress and our fortitude. Father, bless us as we live for you, as we run into you for safety, as we trust in you for that strength. You do undergird us. You give us strength and you orchestrate events in our lives to bring your will about. Do that for us, Lord, and may we be quick to run to our fortress this week and have the right understanding of you, that you are a very present help in trouble, ready to defend us and to show yourself as our God. And we'll give you the praise for what you do in our lives. In Christ's name, amen.